Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is July 11th, 2018. The markets were down today, the Dow closing at 24,700, the NASDAQ at 77.16, and the S&P at 27.74. Our topic tonight is market commentary. We are live. We will take your questions. Lori C is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I have two guests this evening, Tim Roof and Connor Darrell. Tim Roof is a CFP professional, financial advisor, and vice president at Valley National Financial Advisors. Tim assists clients with comprehensive financial planning, including retirement plans, investment management, risk management, and tax planning and preparation. He believes that working with individuals and families on long-term planning and navigating financial options requires a relationship based on mutual respect and understanding. He's also part of the Valley National Financial Advisors Investment Committee, providing experienced, in-depth financial analysis to determine appropriate investment opportunities for clients. Before I introduce Connor, Tim, welcome back to the show.
Welcome. Thanks. Good evening again.
You've been on several times, so thank you for coming back. This hopefully will be a hearty discussion tonight and provide lots of information and education for our listeners. We welcome back also Connor Darrell. He's a senior associate and head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. Connor leads the firm's investment committee and research efforts. It's Connor's job to provide investment analysis and assist Valley National Advisory's teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation. In this role, he meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets. Welcome back, Connor.
Happy to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Connor has an ability to explain all of this complicated analysis, I believe, hopefully in a way that our listeners can kind of get a better grasp on it. And I hope that you guys will come on periodically, because I think sometimes the more often you hear the commentary, it's easier for people to kind of understand and then start to see trends and make sense of it. So it's sometimes a complicated topic, but I think if we visit it periodically, it does become more familiar to people. So tonight, we'll be recapping the first half of the year and getting some insights into what's going on in the financial markets and what we can look for moving forward. Connor, can you give us a quick recap of how markets have performed so far this year?
Sure. So big story so far in 2018, if we go think back to 2017, things were very easy for investors. Markets were up, there was no volatility, it was pretty much an investor's paradise. But this year, after starting with the end of January, volatility has really come back with a vengeance, and the market's really kind of been fluctuating inside a trading range for quite some time now. And a big part of that has kind of been due to escalating trade talks and tensions on that front, as well as some softening global economic growth numbers that have come out. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on in the show. But I think that's probably been the big story so far this year.
And Tim, what about, do you have some comments on that as well?
Well, one topic Connor brought up there is volatility, and I think we'll touch on that a bit here. And this year we've been seeing a lot more volatility than we did in the prior year. And moving forward, I think it's something we're going to have to live with. But overall, the economy looks like it's in good shape and poised to continue to trend higher from here.
Okay, so that's interesting. So we're going to break this down a little bit. So there's volatility, but we see some good things in the economy. So the question might be, what is going on with the volatility? We hear a lot about tariffs. We hear a lot about trade right now. So it seems like every time you turn on the news, there's more talk about tariffs and changes to trade policies. A lot of it seems to spook markets. Can you walk us through what's going on and how we should be thinking about it as investors?
Yeah, so obviously the Trump administration has made it a key initiative for them to kind of refocus on the way that the United States does business with other countries. And that's really kind of permeated into markets in the form of, we're announcing these new tariffs and things. But a big part of that is that historically, China in particular has implemented some measures against companies that are trying to do business in their market, and they force them to make certain concessions about giving away trade secrets and different things that they're trying to accomplish that might be proprietary information. But these companies have been willing to make those concessions because access to the Chinese market is so incredibly lucrative. There's over a billion people in China. It's a fast-growing economy, and it's definitely very attractive to be able to do business there. So these companies have been willing to do this, but the Trump administration is kind of focused on that, and the initiative that they're really pushing, the lever they're trying to pull, is to use threats of tariffs and which basically is a tax on imports. And basically what that does is it punishes China because it'll decrease the commerce that's available to them. I think some of the things that the market has reacted to is the fact that what's been a little bit surprising is that these tariffs have not only been focused on China, but have been really kind of a worldwide focus. And I think allies have been included in that. And part of that has kind of permeated into markets, not really knowing how to make heads or tails of some of the policies that the administration has announced.
Okay. But Tim, go ahead.
And the U.S. administration has three goals that they've been focusing on, and that's been reducing tariffs, having a tougher stance on intellectual property, as well as opening borders to more goods that other countries will accept coming out of the U.S. So where we are is kind of unprecedented in a way, because we haven't had a major trade war. Not saying this is going to be a major trade war, but we're not sure how far this can go or how far this administration may take things at this point in time. But right now, what has been put into place as far as tariffs and what is mentioned as far as tariffs is very minor in scale, would have a very, very minimal impact on growth moving forward.
So big talk about tariffs, you say minimal impact, really. So is it the news sources that are trying to drum it up to make it feel like it's bigger than it is?
I think it's a combination of that and the fact that the market is kind of in the back of everyone's mind is recognizing that, this has the potential to escalate. I mean, I don't think that would be what a lot of investors or experts, so to speak, would say is the base case scenario. But in general, I think a lot of the negative sentiment kind of stems from the fact that, markets are recognizing that trade is pretty much universally accepted by economists to be a pro-growth endeavor. Mm-hmm. So it's by definition mutually beneficial for two countries to engage in trade. And anyone who's taken kind of a entry-level economics course, that's one of the first things they kind of grill into your head. So a lot of these people are looking at this, and certain companies, if there's tariffs on products that they're trying to import that are part of their process for making goods and services, then they're going to have to raise prices on the goods that they're producing, and that could raise prices on consumers, and kind of a spiral effect. That's kind of the negative sentiment that's there. That doesn't necessarily mean that this is going to become a big problem, but it's certainly a possibility.
And the news from time to time, will throw out large numbers as far as dollars of trade. And in the grand scheme of things, what they don't tend to mention is in a percentage of trade, it's very, very small in scale. So the large numbers can, you know, raise anxiety, but in the big picture of things, it's really a minor change to what's going on in the current environment.
Okay. We're up to our first break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about, is there, you know, what is the difference between when we talk about tariffs and when we just talk about global trade? You know, are they always hand in hand, or are they really two separate kind of conversations? If we can talk about that when we come back. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can either talk live on air with us or give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. And the number again is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And tonight I have two guests, Tim Roof, a CFP, and Connor Darrow, Senior Associate and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. And we're talking a little bit about some market commentary and what's going on in the markets and how to understand it a little bit better. Connor, you mentioned, you know, some of this is information you might learn in a basic economics class. Well, it's been a really long time since I've had an economics class. Can you just, for the folks, I thought it might be important to kind of understand the difference when we're talking about trade and we talk about tariffs. Sometimes I think people would start to try to think they go, you know, that you have one and the other at the same time, but that's not necessarily the case. So can you give a little synopsis of an easy way for people to understand what tariffs are, and then go back a little bit to talking about the pro-growth of trade and how trade is actually beneficial back and forth between countries.
Sure. So a tariff is really a tax that you levy on a good that you're going to import from another country. So they do kind of go hand in hand in that a tariff is a way for a country to kind of manipulate or alter the way that trade is conducted. It's not necessarily something that is always used. If you think about, you know, NAFTA, free trade agreement, there's no tariffs if you were to trade with Canada or Mexico, although that's been part of the conversation as well. NAFTA's been kind of pulled into the overall discussion. But the way to think about a tariff is it's a tax. And if you think about going to the store, you're going to go buy something. The fact that you're going to pay a tax on something does not necessarily mean that you're not going to conduct that transaction. It just means it's going to be a little bit more expensive.
Okay. Good way to phrase it.
And with tariffs, it's either a mix of corporations and consumers taking on that burden of the increased cost of goods with the tariffs, or the corporation, if they're financially healthy, can sometimes bear that cost, or sometimes they have to pass that through to the end consumer, which then does drive one of our conversation points, which would be inflation.
Do you want to talk about inflation now, or do you want to, we can move into inflation?
I think it's a good transition. Yeah.
Okay.
So with inflation right now and the current environment is relatively subdued. The Fed's target has been 2% inflation, and inflation's starting to creep up towards 2%, and the expectations it'll remain around 2% or slightly less into the future here. We don't expect our future outlook is we don't expect inflation to run out of control, where the consumer will not be able to continue to handle any of the price increases coming through.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's expected that wages are increasing as well with jobs, and
that's generally the expectation for there to be some pressure on that front, because we're starting to see the unemployment rate has come down. And when that happens, you have, if you're trying to hire someone, there's a smaller pool of workers who are available and willing to work. So in order to draw new employees to your company, you're going to have to increase wages. What's been particularly interesting over the course of this past couple of years is that as the unemployment rate has come down, and as you would kind of start to begin to expect to see some of that wage growth, it's been a little bit, to Tim's point, subdued. And I think it's kind of been perplexing to a lot of economists. Part of that might have to do with the fact that a lot of people kind of left the workforce after the last recession and have been reluctant to come back, and kind of just decided to retire. So there hasn't been as much friction there. But that's just kind of one theory that gets thrown around. I think that there's certainly an argument to be made that now that we're at that 4% mark, unemployment rate is never going to go down to zero. There's always structural things, people changing jobs, people getting fired for different reasons. There's always going to be some level of unemployment in an economy. In fact, it probably is unlikely that the unemployment rate would ever drop below 3%. So right now we're at a very low point in historical terms. And there's certainly a case to be made that we'll start to see some of that wage pressure. Just to this point, hasn't been quite there yet.
Does that add to the? Go ahead, Tim. You were going to add something.
I believe over the last year, wage growth has gone up 2.7%, and that's been creeping up here slightly over the last few months. And that's normal at this time of the economic cycle. But that also proves that the consumer can overall absorb inflation when it's around 2% or so.
Well, certain states mandated an increase in minimum wage, and then some corporations and companies committed to raising wages too. So it could be pressures from that more than job need to do that. Does some of this add to the volatility as well? When we talk about the tariffs, the trades, the jobs, does that add to some of the volatility, people's concerns about that?
Inflation expectations definitely do drive volatility from time to time in the short term, because it has a direct effect on interest rates.
Okay.
And if inflation expectations are running high, then interest rates will likely creep higher. The Fed will will increase the rates as they have. They've done so twice this year out of a quarter percentage point each time. They expect to do that two more times this year as far as what they've communicated. And overall, yes, inflation can drive interest rates. And when interest rates rise and start to trend higher, that means borrowing costs go up. And sometimes that can affect growth to some extent.
Okay. So I think that sometimes what people might infer from a volatile market might be uncertainty, which might make them nervous about the markets. But quite often we hear investment managers, leaders, market leaders talking about the underlying, the underlying factors of what supports a good market, and that would be the economy. So how's the economy holding up with all of this uncertainty?
The economy looks pretty healthy when we look at things. And that's one of the things that we fall back on when we're kind of assessing the environment from an investment perspective, is that while 1 year back there wasn't much going on, like we said, low volatility, pretty easy environment, there's certainly a lot more risks out there that we need to be aware of. And we talked about some of those, and uncertainties in tariffs, and there's been some weakening. I wouldn't say it's overly alarming, but European and some of the international growth globally has declined a bit. But the United States economy is still growing at a faster rate than a vast majority of other developed economies in the world. We talked about the unemployment rate being at a healthy low level. So there are some things there that are really lead us to believe that, you know, a recession is not necessarily a very high probability in the near term. The only thing that as Tim mentioned, that we kind of track certain factors, we call them a heat map. Mm-hmm. One of those is the Fed policies, and that's the only one that from our perspective is flagging something that we need to kind of track. And that doesn't mean that there's a major problem. It just means that the Fed is becoming less accommodative. And I know we talked about that a lot the last time we were on the show.
Yes, and Connor alluded to the heat map and some of these pillars, and that includes consumer spending, the interest rate policies, as well as business profitability. So when you look at the consumer and business profitability, it's very, very positive. It's strengthening. So we're very pleased with what we're seeing from an economic growth standpoint. The one item that Connor mentioned that is not a tailwind like the business profitability and consumer spending is the interest rate policy. However, interest rates are still very, very low in historic terms, and interest rates at this level are normally still positive for the stock markets.
And isn't that the increasing the rates by the Fed part of that the economy is doing better? I mean, isn't
exactly.
that part, go hand in hand?
Part of what the Fed does is, I mean, and they took a long time to do this. That we were at 0% interest rates for a number of years, and it was kind of an unprecedentedly long period of time where we had it like that. But the Federal Reserve really kind of, they track, I mean, they're incredibly smart economists that are looking at all this data, and they made the determination that the economy is standing on strong enough footing that it can handle interest rates starting to creep up. But I'd like to also point out, when we talk about, there's a lot of discussion about interest rates and how they're rising and how it can be created some headwinds for bonds and the stock market as well, and just kind of adding, choking off some of that growth, so to speak. But one of the positives has been over the last year or so, as the short-term bond rates have come up, you're now able to get higher yields without having to take on more risk. Where historically, in the last several years, if you wanted to get a higher yielding bond, you had to go down and I would almost call it dumpster diving for lower credit quality bonds that have higher probabilities of default. So that's something that has been a positive for bond investors, that you no longer really need to do that because the bonds yields are now higher.
Okay, we're going to talk more about that when we come back from this next break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And if you would like to call live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori. It's the same phone number, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Maybe you need something explained, or if anything we're talking about is too complicated and you'd like us to expand upon something, we certainly can. Again, 610-758-8810. I want to go back for a few minutes to talk about the Fed policies and the interest rates. Sometimes, can I tell you what's been in the back of my head when people are reacting, you know, because I think it's supposed to be a good sign when the Fed starts to raise rates. It was a long time coming. Everyone saw that the economy was doing better. We expected the rates to be raised, you know, probably a little sooner than they were. And then people get upset. Oh, my gosh, they raised the rates. And then, you know, people react. You know, the saying, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. Sometimes I wonder, like, who is it who's saying these things? You know, let the system work. Just like when we talk about trade being pro-growth. And, you know, some of these systems have been going on for a very long time. So when we talk about the interest rates, if we could kind of explain to people a little bit more where you were going. Connor, you were talking about that there's some opportunities now in the short term because short-term rates have gone up. And then when we talk about, you know, dumpster diving and going kind of looking for better rates, where are we looking for those? Sometimes you'll hear people talk about the yield curve and what does that mean? So can you kind of give a little, some definitions or framework to help people understand why are interest rates important? What do they, what does it all mean?
Yeah, so one of the things that when people kind of look at what's going on in the interest rate environment, a lot of people are pointing to the fact that the yield curve has begun to flatten. And the yield curve basically just measures the yield you would get on different bonds with different maturities. So a one-year bond might have 2%. A three-year bond might have 2.5%.
So they plot these out on a little graph, on a line.
And as it flattens, all that means is that the longest-term bonds are either coming down or staying the same, and the ones that are issued for shorter terms are coming up. And historically, there's been times in the past where that curve has actually turned to have a negative slope, where the shorter term bonds actually have higher yields than longer term bonds. And when that has happened, that's been there's a number of instances where that kind of was a foreshadow or a signal that a recession was on the horizon. So that's one of the things that people look at as a kind of an indicator that a recession might be coming.
So someone might be getting nervous. People could be getting nervous about that, because if the Fed's raising rates, the shorter term rates are starting to go up, but the longer term rates had been suppressed for so long, they might still be low. So now the fear is, oh, are we going to have that inversion?
Right. That's some of the concern that's okay. out there for sure. But I think that when we look at it and we take a step back, it's important to kind of note that, for one thing, not every single yield curve inversion in history has led to or has foreshadowed a recession. There's been a couple where the yield curve inverted for whatever reason. It kind of switched back and there was no recession. And there's also been instances where the yield curve inverted and then a recession happened, you know, 2 years later, several years later. So it's not necessarily a flashing signal that a recession is like going to happen next month. And the other factor here is that, number two, I think it's pretty unlikely, I would say, that the Fed will allow this to happen. I think they're very cognizant of the fact that people are aware of the fact that an inverted yield curve might signal something bad, and they don't want to send that signal to the market. They're going to be very careful about that.
So we have a lot more involvement of the Fed than we used to decades ago.
Yes, there has been since the recession a lot more involvement in the Fed. The balance sheet has increased from, I believe, $1.5 trillion up to $4.5 trillion. They're starting now to whittle their balance sheet down slowly over time. So they're being very pragmatic and careful on how they go about reducing their balance sheet and raising rates over time, because they know the adverse effects that it could cause to the economy and stock market if they do things too quickly. And overall, you know, as you said before, interest rates are not always a bad thing. It does mean the economy is improving. And I think retirees and savers alike now are looking at things, and they might be a bit more confident because they're starting to see their cash and their savings and their bonds starting to yield more and provide a greater rate of return. And big picture, over the next 5 to 10 years, you know, investors that have a diversified allocation, have cash and bonds, they can expect higher returns now because rates are a bit higher from their bond and cash sleeves.
Okay.
And to even add to that, we talked about how there's a connection between interest rates and inflation. For the first time since before the financial crisis, you can now buy a one-year treasury bond and earn a positive real return, meaning that the rate of return on that bond is higher than the rate of inflation. Previously, if you were to do that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, you would sit in that bond for 1 year and you would make money, but in real terms, you would not be keeping up with the pace of inflation. So you'd be coming out behind. But for the first time in a long period of time, we're now able to say that, you know, you come out in front. And if inflation, that'll be kind of an interesting dynamic to watch. We talked about how there might be some inflation moving upwards with where the unemployment rate is and where wage growth might be going. But I think that's an important thing to note, is that this, for the first time in about 10 years, that's something we can say.
And Tim, would you expect that if people had an expected rate of return they might have needed in those retirement years, they might have actually had to take a little bit more risk in their portfolio to provide the means to live on? And if we start seeing interest rates rise a little bit, they can kind of like reevaluate maybe their portfolio and where they were, whether they need to continue to take that kind of risk exposure?
Certainly. Now's a great time to really take a step back and look at where you are and what your goals are, what your rate of return goal mixed with your long-term time horizon and objectives are with your risk management, because now is the point of time where you can look at and say, hey, I'm earning a little bit more yield on bonds. I don't have to take as much risk in equities as I did in the past to earn the rate of return I was looking for to achieve my goals.
Okay. So they might have gotten that exposure in equities, but as Connor mentioned earlier, it could have been they were dumpster diving too and looking for kind of low quality bonds as well, which also exposes them to more risk than they might need. So it might be really a good time to reevaluate.
Right. I think this is a great time to be looking at your portfolio in that light. And even when you think about the returns we had in 2017 in the equity market, you know, those returns, 20%+ returns, that jump, that could, in terms of your financial plan, that could jump you ahead 2 or 3 years. So it really is a great time, considering kind of where we've been, where we are, to be kind of taking a step back and just looking at things in a different light, because the next 10 years are very unlikely to be like the last 10 years. And as we've said, it doesn't necessarily mean anything terrible is happening, but returns are probably not going to be as high as they've been.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on globally as well. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDLY 88.1 FM, Allentown and Bethlehem. It's 6:30. Your current temperature is 87. On Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 82. Thursday night, mostly clear with a low around 61. Friday, sunny with a high near 85. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low around 64. Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly sunny with a high near 86. And Saturday night, low around 67. And for your Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 91. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert and Guess.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. We're talking about some market commentary with Connor Darrell and Tim Roof from Valley National. We were just talking about kind of understanding the impact of what's been going on, not only in the markets, but also with the Fed policies and rising interest rates, which helps people a little bit on the short term side of their bond piece. And maybe they need to reevaluate their holdings, their portfolio, in light of what we've just gone through for the last couple of years. Before we move on to global, what's going on globally, is there anything else you guys wanted to add to that at all?
From a global perspective?
No, from the reviewing your portfolio and things like that.
You know, overall, I would just say continue to monitor and rebalance annually and take an assessment of where you are, because you know where you were 5 years ago is not, you may not have the same objectives as you do today. And when you maybe needed a 7% rate of return as you were accumulating, and now you're maybe approaching retiree or nearing retirement, you may only need 4 or 5% from your portfolio for your retirement to work. So just really look at things and see where you're taking your risks and manage those risks appropriately.
Yeah, that's a great point, because actually you said you might not be where you were 5 years, even despite what's been going on in the markets. That's actually probably a true statement for anybody. So that good reminder. So let's talk about, we talked a little bit about you know, what's going on with interest rates and the volatility, the tariffs, the trade. What about globally? What are we seeing, you know, going on there? U.S. stocks have been crazy in 2017. Small caps had done really well. You mentioned earlier global growth softened a little bit. Investment advisors often stress the importance of diversification, which is one of the reasons we just, you know, we were just kind of talking about that. Review where you are. Diversification includes owning foreign stocks, you know, domestic, small cap, large cap, all kinds of different things. But what's going on internationally?
Yeah, so far this year, the United States has significantly outperformed international markets, particularly that's kind of been driven by U.S. small caps, and even in larger cap names, you have an instance that I think is kind of fascinating on the S&P 500. There's been three stocks, and this was a headline on CNBC yesterday, three stocks, Amazon, Netflix, and Microsoft, that have driven over 70% of the S&P 500's gains this year, which is a staggering statistic. But but internationally there hasn't really been that kind of growth explosion. And a big part of that has been the fact that we talked a little bit earlier about GDP growth has come down a little bit overseas. It's not at a point where it's overly alarming, but nevertheless, it's certainly not a positive for markets. And we also have a phenomenon so far this year, and that part of this has to do with the fact that the Fed's rate is raising interest rates. So there's a lot of kind of interworkings and interconnections in the global economy. But the U.S. dollar has been strengthening significantly this year. And that tends to hurt foreign companies because it makes their goods less appealing, so to speak.
So then that helps U.S. businesses then, if people
yes.
are spending more money here on domestic goods than foreign goods. But then in your international holdings in your portfolio, they might not perform as well because of that.
And the other thing, if you're investing in a foreign stock, if you want to buy a foreign stock on the London Stock Exchange, so to speak, you actually had to exchange your dollars for pounds in order to make that transaction. And if over that time period the pound is declining, you're losing out. Even if the stock goes up, you've lost value on a relative basis on the currency, because when you sell it, you're going to want to convert those pounds back to dollars.
Okay. Do you see anything in the international stocks that might look good? I mean, are there still opportunities there? Does it mean you take it out of your portfolio?
Valuations look good on an international standpoint. I mean, what we're looking at in the foreign developed space and the emerging space relative to U.S., valuations are cheaper for foreign companies. So that does create opportunity. That doesn't necessarily mean, now tomorrow the international stocks are going to start outperforming. But over time, we would expect that the baton to kind of be turned over to foreign stocks for a period, because if you look back across history, U.S. will lead foreign and then foreign will lead U.S. And since 2008, we've basically seen U.S. lead foreign at some point. And actually last year, 2017, was the first year where foreign stocks outperformed U.S. stocks. And up until the trade talks that had started this year, foreign was the leader, but that has changed since some of the trade protectionism policies have been kind of put into place here at this point in time. So I think once that some of that uncertainty is lifted, we may start to see foreign stocks start to outperform U.S. stocks again.
So in 2017, foreign stocks were outperforming U.S. stocks. In 2018, we're seeing U.S. stocks outperforming foreign stocks. We might see it go, foreign stocks might make a comeback, which then just brings me back to our listening audience. The reason this stuff gets so complicated is that these are always seems to be moving targets. There's volatility, there's different forces that impact where the markets are and different kinds of investments that we have. And we go back to that diversification, because there's going to be times where one piece might be performing better and the other one not so much. But to Connor's point, it's not that they were not performing, they were still performing. It's just that one was outperforming the other. So we're still seeing some opportunities there across the board.
Right, absolutely. To Tim's point, when we look globally, stocks internationally look a little bit cheaper than those in the United States. And typically, if you have a stock that's cheaper, as long as the actual underlying fundamentals of the stock are still strong, it has an opportunity for outperformance. But generally, valuations have been historically a very difficult or poor market timing mechanism. So it's very difficult to say that just because one stock is cheaper than another or one region is cheaper than another, that now is the right time to jump in. It's extreme. There's really no tool to determine those kinds of timing mechanisms. And it goes back to your point of diversification. This is why you diversify, because it's almost impossible to actually determine when the market will turn or when a theme will turn over. And that's evidenced in the fact that, I think that's probably where a lot of investors have their biggest mistakes, is that they try to kind of chase these trends. And you just end up, we call it getting whipsawed.
Because no one rings a bell and says, hey, international is going to outperform U.S. or vice versa, or small caps will outperform large caps. And that's why, again, coming back to diversification, and being disciplined with your diversification is so important, and holding the right mix in order to meet your objectives and manage your risk tolerance overall.
For anyone who's had science class, there's a periodic table that shows all the elements in the periodic table. And if you find a colored one, it looks like a big jumble. And we've seen, and I don't know if there's a name for them, charts that show over time, year by year, the different asset classes and how they've performed. And it also just looks like a big quilt of multicolored fascination, because it does, you don't see a trend of any one particular asset class outperforming. It's all over the place, right?
It's probably one of the most used charts in all of the financial advisory world, I would say. And we actually do, we call it the periodic table of asset returns.
Okay, because that demonstrates that it's better to have kind of a disciplined approach to your diversification too, as well. Let's talk about the second half of the year. What are some of the things you're watching for the second half of the year? Because we are in the second half of the year now.
I think the trade story is going to continue to be something that's not really going to go away anytime soon. And for that reason, we could be dealing with volatility for the foreseeable future. For equities, I think it looks like markets are kind of poised, as I said earlier, to remain in a somewhat bounded trading range. And that's really until we're given some kind of meaningful new news that would allow the markets to either continue climbing or if it were bad news, to actually have a correction. And one of the reasons I say that I think we'll be kind of bounded is that when we think back to the beginning of the year, January was an unbelievable month. The markets were up like 8%. And right at the end of January, they kind of just turned. And there were a couple things out there that were a little bit kind of negative, but there wasn't one huge thing that we could all point to and say, that's why the market tanked. And for that reason, there wasn't really, when I come back to it and think about it, I just kind of say to myself, if we couldn't sustain the price level we were at back in January, and nothing has really dramatically changed in the underlying economy or in the marketplace since then, I don't know that we can really sustain that price level again. But I mean, I've been wrong before. I'll probably be wrong again. But I just think that's one of the reasons that I don't see markets soaring from here. I also don't see them tanking. I think it's going to be kind of in a bounded range. And I don't know if Tim agrees with me or not on that.
For now, the market tends to dislike uncertainty. And that's what we have in regards to some of these policies surrounding trade. So if this tends to be not as tough on trade, or we see that the tariffs really aren't that big of an effect to growth, and it's not affecting growth to the extent that some, market observers expect, well, that could help, show how strong the economy really is behind the scenes, and that could then drive the stock market higher. But for now, I do agree with Connor overall. We could be range bound for a time period until some of this uncertainty is lifted.
Well, we often, when we're talking with clients and trying to explain the market and risk tolerance, we use the analogy of a yo-yo, going up and going up and down, going on an escalator with a yo-yo. So the escalator's going up, the yo-yo's going up and down. When we see kind of the markets going crazy, isn't that just part of the yo-yo? And why would people be surprised if we see a little blip in the market? We've all been here before. I don't understand why people get so. Sometimes I'll come on the show and I'll say, "Oh, guess what? The market went down and the market went up, and that's how it works, folks."
I think part of it is we get a little bit spoiled because we haven't had this. 2017 in historical terms was one of the most benign investment environments in history, and so you have a full year of that, and you kind of start thinking to yourself, "Hey, taking risk is fun. This is great. Markets are going up," and then when that volatility returns, it kind of smacks you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Volatility is normal. Volatility from a standpoint of corrections, and correction meaning the market drops 10%, that happens once every 2 to 3 years. A pullback of 5% or more happens once or twice a year historically. If you were to look back, and I'll give you some information here. If you were to look back to 2009, at one point in time, the market had dropped 28%. But in 2009, the S&P finished 23% up for that year. In 2010, we had a 16% decline, but yet the market still achieved a 13% return that year. So just as an example, the market volatility is normal. That doesn't mean you're not going to have positive returns for a year. It just means that it's short term in nature, and try to keep that into perspective.
In fact, if you're invested in something that continues to go up with no volatility, I would probably suggest that you reevaluate what it is, because it might be a Ponzi scheme. We were at a conference a couple years ago, and one of the presenters brought up a chart, or two charts, and next to each other, and one of them was a line was gradually moving up, and it was all squiggly, and it looked volatile. And the other one was actually a chart of Bernie Madoff's hedge fund return. And everyone wanted to be invested in Bernie Madoff's hedge fund return. He didn't tell us which one was which. So I just think, to Tim's point, volatility is normal. It is healthy. It's something that exists in markets. And if we didn't have it, we wouldn't have price discovery. So,
well, in fact, the more experienced investors who understand this end up not reacting emotionally, and they're counting on the people who don't understand it who will react emotionally.
It creates opportunity for those investors, that type of volatility, because then they can buy companies cheaper than they were a few weeks or several months prior.
Okay. We're at our last break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the risks in the market that grab investors' attention, you know, playing off this last point that we just talked about. Folks, if you have questions, there's still time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And you could also email questions to yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have with me in the studio this evening Tim Roof, CFP professional from Valley National Financial Advisors, and Connor Darrell, a senior associate and head of investments at Valley National. And we're talking about market commentary, some things just to kind of get your arms around to help you understand what's going on in the markets and how you, with more information, will be able to kind of understand, brace yourself for the volatility, make sure you're diversified, review your portfolio. It's always a good idea to rebalance and pay attention to kind of what's going on, but try to avoid emotional reactions. So Tim and Connor, we have, you know, 13 minutes left. Oh, by the way, if folks still have questions, we have time, 610-758-8810. So we've already talked a bit kind of throughout the show about some of the risk in the market that people are kind of paying attention to, or that might be contributing to the volatility. When we talk about interest rates and inflation, we talked about the inversion of the yield curve, meaning, you know, rates are going up more on the short term and still lower on the long term. A little bit about trade tensions and tariffs. What other types of risk that might grab investors' attention when they're, you know, hearing the news?
I think one of the things that we haven't touched on yet, but generally, and we usually, when we talk about this, we make the caveat that over the long term, these are things that don't necessarily drastically alter the trajectory of markets, but geopolitics in general is always something that's kind of on the horizon, especially in the world we live in today. We had a big kind of landmark meeting between North Korea and the United States. Nothing really tangible came out of that. But we also have the U.S. midterms coming up. Historically, that adds a little bit of an extra element of uncertainty in terms of what the U.S. policy is going to be like. We also have negotiations on the debt ceiling in Congress. That's something that's been in Congress for, it seems like, forever now, and they just keep kicking the can down the road. But at some point, they're going to have to address that. And, you know, if they can't come to an agreement, we could have a government shutdown that could impact briefly markets. But like we said, these are things that aren't necessarily going to drastically change the picture.
Geopolitics tend to or can drive markets historically on a short-term basis, but not necessarily long-term. Because geopolitics can drive headlines, but as long as the policies don't constrict growth or trade or other things materially that behind the scenes in the economy, the economy continues on that path that is expected overall. So don't get too hung up on geopolitics at all times, because historically it's only created short-term volatility from time to time.
What do you think about the tax reform that went through? How much did that really impact, if it did at all?
I think we're seeing that right now in earnings growth. Earnings growth has been well above expectations. I believe earnings growth is close to 25% in the first quarter, Connor. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing that occur, and that's expected to kind of run through this year and next year. So earnings growth expectations are quite positive. U.S. companies are bringing over more overseas funds.
So we are seeing that?
Yes, and we are. We're actually seeing increased capital expenditures from companies. It's over the last year or so, CapEx has capital expenditures have been improving, and that's been also another helpful driver to the economy.
Okay.
Yeah, tax reform for sure is, tax cuts are considered fiscal stimulus, and that's a positive for the economy, and it's likely to extend the economic cycle to some extent. So that's definitely something that's going to be a tailwind for the economy, for stocks, for the foreseeable future.
Any comment? Go ahead, Tim.
So in February, for the first time following the tax reform, many employees were starting to see increases in their paychecks. And, a lot of times consumers then drive the economy with that increase in their paycheck.
And then I'm going to send out a public service announcement about that, because what we have to be careful of and caution our listeners about is that the reason they saw a little increase in their paycheck is because the tax withholding tables were updated to provide for the tax reform, the lower tax rates, et cetera, and the standard deductions that have changed. And some people might not realize that if they in the past had had particular withholdings that might have covered not only their paycheck, but it might have also covered some of their interest or dividends or other income on their tax return, they may not have adequate withholding. So they really need to look at that or work with their tax preparer to make sure they're projecting out their the proper amount of withholdings to cover the tax that they might expect to have due.
That's a great point, Lori.
Because we've seen that on some folks that we've been looking at.
Yeah, especially those that have had larger deductions in the past and exemptions with dependents. That could change now because their deductions may have decreased some because of the changes to the itemized deductions this year and the changes to the withholding table. So now's a good time to reassess your withholdings and see if it's on track so you don't have a surprise come tax filing time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay, you guys, we still have about 8 minutes left. What else do you think is important to talk about that we haven't covered when we're talking either about market commentary or just in general investing, some guidelines?
I think I'll just add or kind of reiterate that I think looking forward, we're still have, I would call it, tempered optimism. I don't think that there's not someone kind of flashing a red flag and saying, oh my God, this is something's terrible's on the horizon, but at the same time, there are risks that out there that we need to be aware of that 1 year ago weren't really there. But that, like I said, that does not necessarily mean that the bull market's coming to an end. It just means we have to be a little bit more careful.
Yeah, from over the last 5 years, the U.S. stock market, the S&P 500, has averaged about a double-digit return over that time frame. And, earnings growth is looking good out into the future right now. But we're just suggesting to folks now at this point in time that, Yes, we expect earnings growth to increase, but maybe not at the same levels in double digits that it has in the past. We're looking more forward to mid-single to upper single-digit returns over the next 5 to 10 years. So if you own a balanced or moderate portfolio, you know, rate of returns expectations might have been higher in the past because you were getting higher returns from the stock market. And now you kind of have to, you know, take an assessment of where we are in the economic cycle and maybe reduce some of your return expectations, you know, marginally overall, and just assess how that could have an impact on your overall financial plan.
And I think that it's important. It sounds simple, but maybe we should mention that when people look at the market and they say, oh my gosh, the market is up or the market is down, typically they're looking at the Dow Jones or the S&P or the NASDAQ, and how does that actually relate to their actual portfolio model or performance?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic point. And we see it all the time in headlines. Oftentimes, the Dow is the one that gets cited because the Dow is now up around 24,000. So a small percentage move can translate into hundreds of points. And when someone comes on the screen and says the Dow is down 500 points, it sounds dramatic, and it sells newspapers, it sells viewers, and it's something we need to be cognizant of because in actual percentage terms, it's really not that meaningful. So we've seen that a lot over especially when all the volatility was really spiking in February.
And what kind of asset classes do we have in the Dow?
We have large cap stocks, and there's only 30 of them.
That's right. And so what happens is people's portfolio typically aren't made up of just large cap stocks.
And you talked about, you know, the headline news and how it affects their portfolio. Well, again, it comes back to asset allocation overall, because consider the fact that, you know, if you're a conservative investor, you're not taking on as much risk. So you might see the market could drop and the headline news could be bad, but you shouldn't be experiencing that, you know, if you have a conservative allocation. That comes back to making sure that your asset allocation is aligned with your risk tolerance overall.
Mm-hmm. And different investment managers might use different kind of benchmarks to kind of measure a client's performance against a more true benchmark than just the Dow or just the S&P. Because it's a diversified portfolio typically, right? Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of times if you have a diversified portfolio, you should be using or combining a number of different benchmarks that are in aggregate matched to what your allocation looks like. So you shouldn't really be, if you have a portfolio that's 40% bonds, of course you're not going to have the same return as the S&P 500.
Right, and that keeps that keeps everything relative, so you can make sure that you're not doing anything unusual with your portfolio as long as you have an adequate benchmark.
Okay, and we also always remind people to have emergency reserves so that you have that cash or money available for any of those purchases or emergencies you might have. Connor, what do you have there? I see some charts.
Oh, yeah, I was just kind of flipping through. I think we might have touched upon it, but I think one of the interesting things to note is that the economic expansion we find ourselves in now is now officially the second longest in history. And that's kind of been a product of the fact that, you know, for the longest period of time, it was kind of very slow, gradual growth. And if we, to explain briefly the chart, in actual terms from bottom to top, we are nowhere near the peak or the longest growth period. It's just been dragged out over a much longer period of time than has been historically. And we've seen that with kind of the recent cycles over the last 20, 30 years have kind of gotten a little bit longer in duration than historically, which is kind of just an interesting phenomenon that has kind of taken place in the economy.
And what Connor means there is that the cumulative growth since the recession has been less than other prior recoveries at this time, even though this is the second longest expansion. We're behind in cumulative growth compared to those other economic cycles. So that can suggest there's still room to run here.
So sometimes it's about kind of putting it in perspective. And you guys stay very calm about all this stuff. But sometimes the individual investors aren't as calm because they don't have all this background or this framework for that, right?
I'd say I hope that that's something that we can achieve with being on the show. I think anytime you have a little bit more knowledge in your pocket about kind of how the market functions, it helps you to kind of remain a little bit more disciplined. I think it's just kind of a fact of life. If you feel like there's something you don't understand, you're more likely to kind of just back away from it. And I think that's where people have historically made some mistakes, where they kind of sold off their portfolios at the wrong time.
Right. And when they let emotion lead them versus their long-term goals, emotion can drive folks to sell low and buy high. They sell when things get bad, and then they buy back in once they feel confident and comfortable again. But at that time, you know, you may have seen some of this, the recovery already occur, and they're buying back in toward the end of the recovery, or the cycle. So it's something that, you know, you should be aware of. It's just stay disciplined.
And then it's rinse, repeat, because we see that cycle happen more than once. Sometimes people are doing that in and out three times, and they're really writing it down.
Yeah, and as Tim said, there's no one that rings a bell, so we don't know when the right time is. So it's best to kind of, I mean, there certainly makes sense at a lot of points to make changes to the overall allocation as your goals change or as the environment changes, but it's rarely a good strategy to constantly be in and out and trying to time things.
Okay. You guys, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. How do people reach you if they have questions or want to talk to you anymore?
Yeah, folks can reach me by phone at 610-868-9000, my extension's 113, or email me at troof@valleynationalgroup.com.
And I can be reached at the same number, extension 129, and my email is cdarrell@valleynationalgroup.com.
I really appreciate you guys coming, and I hope that we can continue having these discussions, because boy, do I learn a lot, and I appreciate it. I also want to mention that Lehigh Valley SCORE has Simple Steps for Starting Your Business coming up Saturday, July 14th. You can go on their website at lehighvalleyscore.org, I believe. Next week, I have retirement planning considerations. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.